All right, everybody, and welcome to episode 261 of the 9 Years Podcast. I'm Nick Draper. I am joined, as always, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. Apologies for the late running of the show this week. Sometimes life gets in the way. These things happen, I'm afraid, and that's one of these weeks. We'll probably just prepare you that September might be a funny month with games. And Stuart, I'm meaning to send you these things, but we've got some interesting problems in September, I think, with recording fixtures and what have you, recording podcasts because of fixtures. Next week might be a problem because of England games and back to school and things like that. At the end of the month, the Arsenal game looks like being on the 22nd, which is the Wednesday. And then my brother Chris of the 9 Years Podcast, you will see him on Twitter regularly on our Twitter handle. He's getting married on the 23rd of September on the Thursday. So I don't know what we're going to do that week. We might have to delay it again that week. We'll let you know well in advance, listen, if that's what's going to happen. Stu, do you want an interesting story about the Arsenal game?
Yes, go for it.
Because we've not spoken about it, because we recorded last week's podcast before the draw had been made for the next round of the FA Cup. I wish. The Carabao Cup, or as we like to call it, the League Cup. And we have been drawn away to Arsenal, Premier League side. Did some digging on their website, Stu. Arsenal are not requiring any form of COVID vaccination or negative COVID test certification or evidence to allow you into the stadium. They said that is not anything that they're looking for. So as it stands, that means that I might well actually end up going. But if they ask for any form of COVID proof, no, I am dead against this. Not because I am anti-vaccinations, because I am anti-vaccination passports.
Yeah, do you know, I'm in two minds actually whether I'm going to go or not. And it may sound weird, and it's not, to be honest with you, it's not for the COVID side of it, although it would have an influence. I'm very similar to you on that. I'm just not sure if I want to go. I think we get turned over, and it's not that I want to go to every game that you'll win, but I'm just sort of thinking midweek, do I really? And I sort of got into this habit of not doing away games and spending some time with my son and stuff like that. Who can I just say, by the way, right? This was a funny story. You'll laugh at this. So my son on Tuesday, I was at a player sponsors meal, and he doesn't normally sleep when I'm not here. I think he's used to me putting him to bed. So my wife done a FaceTime, and he was with me, and he had gone into our toilet. We'd got a new toilet brush. Okay. He had taken a toilet brush and he felt it was something that he wanted to sleep with. It's the most hilarious thing I've seen. And I was saying goodnight, and he was blowing me kisses, and he had his toilet brush in his other hand. And it's been his friend ever since. I know sometimes we can be a bit shit, but you know, we're not that bad sometimes, are we? So I'm not too sure. I think I'm probably gonna spend some time home with it. Yeah, it's a great draw, but it's a great draw financially. In my opinion. But, you know, talking about COVID, I was chatting to George Jones, actually, because he was saying, I know, George Jones, the dodgy hair, the one who gets everywhere well early. He was saying at Ipswich, they had that, didn't they? And I was just saying, well, they could have checked everybody. But he was saying to me that Ipswich had hundreds, well, he might be exaggerating, but it felt like hundreds of stewards checking everybody to ensure they'd had a COVID test, etc. I went in, which... it's a lot of, hey, look, some people may go, great, that's what they should be doing. I'm thinking that's an expensive thing to do for something that realistically is going to be around for forever.
Yeah, I mean, we won't go down that line of conversation at the moment, but I'll just say I was never going to Ipswich away. I've done Portman Road now. I wasn't looking to return this year, but if I was thinking of going and then saw that they were looking for COVID passports, no, I would have just not gone. I refused to partake in this. But hey, that's not a conversation for another day. I've just got a message, Stu, here from the National Podcast Awards. We've just won a nomination for weirdest start to a podcast ever. Oh, wow. And that is for this week's episode 261 show, talking about COVID passports and your son's love of toilet brushes.
So good that they're so on the ball. Like, they are so up with it, aren't they, Jamie? So thank you for that nomination, and we will look forward to...
We've not even released the podcast yet. They're listening in. This is the surveillance society that I'm worried about. This is why I'm against COVID passports. This is the reason, because Big Brother is always watching. Anyway, let's move on. Yeah. So this week we will be talking about the 2-2 draw at Ipswich, and we'll be looking at the other things going on in League One, previewing Oxford's visit on Saturday. We've got a few other things to talk about, including season tickets, everyone's favourite topic of conversation right now. sponsors meal and Don's Trust board elections, as well as looking back as to what happened this time in 2001, 20 years ago. But first of all, Stu, let's get this one out of the way. You're talking about the Ipswich 2-2 draw. Joe Piggott celebrating or not celebrating, who cares?
Exactly. I know he got a bit of a bad, he didn't get a great reception, which I think is really sad, you know, for what he did for us, 20 goals last season. He got a penalty. Do you know what, maybe I was more annoyed the fact that he put the penalty away so easily, because he didn't always do that for us, did he? He looked really...
Mentioning no League Cup games against Milton Keynes at any point.
Exactly, but that's what disappointed me the most, was that he put it away so comfortably, put the keeper the wrong way, and then did a little heart thing. You don't know who that was to. But do you know what? Good luck to him. He's got a new career. He's at Ipswich. He obviously wants to impress the fans there. I wish him no harm at all, or ill feeling. And I think we should have been a bit more appreciative for what he did for us rather than giving him a bit of grief, which just doesn't... I don't know. I want players to celebrate goals. Like, we moan about players getting bookings for goals for celebrations. Let him celebrate.
Yeah, I've never had an issue with players celebrating. I don't... like... You're there now playing for Ipswich. You're doing a job for Ipswich. You score goals for that team. It's fine. I don't care. Celebrate out to your heart's content. It's absolutely fine with me. There are certain exceptions to this. Danny Kedwell didn't celebrate when he scored against us at the end of the 2012-13 season, because at the time we were going down. And that's a different thing, because that's a long-term consequence. But August game in the league, it's like, just get on and do it. Lyle Taylor celebrated for Charlton when they beat us 2-1 at King's Meadow.
Yeah, like, no, I agree with you. But again, the celebrations that I'm probably not cool is when you like Adebayo.
Well,
Man
that's
City.
Different. Yes, of
yeah,
course,
yeah. Do you know what I mean? That's deliberately, like, if Joe Piggott had run and literally cupped his ears in front of the fans, away fans, then he deserved what he got. But he didn't.
No. And he would never have done. And I think the heart was probably more of a sign to Mark Robinson on the bench, perhaps, as well. So that's another thing you have to factor into these things. There was a little bit of moral panic. This Facebook group of ours, Stu, is absolute gold for entertainment. Do you know what? I hate social media so much. I would delete it in an instant. And when I rule the world, which is not far away now, it's going to happen any day. I can feel it. First thing I would do is delete social media. That Facebook group is brilliant. The moral panic we had as well on the flip side of the Joe Piggott thing was about songs that were winding him up. Again, like, it's just football fans having some banter. It's what happens. It was nothing over the line. You should have stayed at a big club like these things. It's just, come on, that's just football fans having a laugh. And no one really remembers it come the end of the game. It's go home, happy, had a laugh, job done.
Mm. Wasn't he called like a shit Lyle Taylor?
Well, he is.
But like, that's a compliment to Lyle Taylor, surely, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, do you know what, actually, on that point, I am being flippant again, by the way, because remember, Stu, I can't make jokes on this podcast. I'm not allowed to. I have to clarify that I am making a joke. The other one that made me laugh is the fact that Danny Kedwell, who I mentioned earlier, absolutely worshipped by every single AFC Wimbledon fan. But if you remember the first time he came back to King's Meadow with Gillingham, we invented the Jack Nidson makes Kedwell look shite song. It's just football banter. Yeah. That's what it is at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I'm reading Eric's book at the moment. I've got to the City of Manchester bit and stuff, and it's also talking about the Danny Kedwell, where Crawley made two bids for Danny Kedwell, and you sort of remember back then. It's quite interesting reading back. I'm not going to spoil it for anyone who's not got the book. If you haven't, yeah, it's a good read. But it's talking about Mike Richardson taking them to the Cheltenham races before the Crawley. And it says that basically there was five players that went. They were told not to go. Five players went. One of them included Jamie Stewart.
Of course.
And Terry Brown apparently had a face-to-face argument with him. Well, I wouldn't have had an argument with Jamie Stewart.
No.
But do you know what? I can work out why he was such a psycho. Apparently, he used to have energy drink powders and loads of caffeine. And he would then go into the showers. This is a true story. Go into the showers, do press-ups. He would then be sick because of how much he had. He would throw up, and then he would be, like, on it, ready for the game to start. No wonder he was a nutter in the middle.
Well, yeah, that's quite the pre-match routine, isn't it?
Isn't it? Like, it's probably not healthy.
I wouldn't have thought so.
No, but I think it was Seb Brown who basically said that. But, yeah, I'm just getting to the part of league football and that. But it's been really good to read back about some of the things that happened. That's what got us into League One, you know, all those things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, being a shit Lyle Taylor, I'll take being a shit Lyle Taylor.
Well, we know you would. blimey.
He is shit at the moment, let's be fair. He's going through the motions for Nottingham Forest, but then I think most of the team are.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a good situation for us. It's not been a good situation for many years. You know, if Jamie Stewart's part of his pre-match routine was to throw up before kickoff, he should have signed for Hartlepool and had one of their burgers, because it would guarantee it every single time when they had a home game, at least. Did you have a burger up at Hartlepool?
No. Hartlepool, I just don't. It's so cold up there.
Well, yeah.
Like, I don't know if you remember coming down, when we got the coach there, you literally, it's a really high land. And you come down, you can see the ground, you can see the North Sea, and it's just like cold. Cold. Why would you live in Hartlepool? It's like, it's probably on a par with Newport.
Well, no. Newport's on a whole other level of its own. But that burger they sold at Hartlepool was Newport worthy in its lack of quality. I can only assume it was sold as meat, but it must have been an early prototype for this vegan meat, because I don't know what was inside it, Stu. It wasn't meat, I'll tell you that much. No. Oh, my word. Anyway, right. 2-0 down at Ipswich. We got back to 2-2 in the end. First of all, very quickly, was it a penalty? Was the referee right to award the penalty against us for Will Nightingales?
Yeah,
I think we all agree on that one. Do you know what I thought it was? I think it's one of those where the player's gone past, taken the ball past Will, and he's knocked it too far. He has knocked it too far. But it's the sort of situation you see on the halfway line, for example. And in that situation, if it was Will in that position on the halfway line, Will would probably have expected, because the touch is heavy, the ball's probably already gone, and we've got possession back because another one of our defenders has just intercepted it. And Will's just instinctively thought that's what's happened and done the typical. Because you're on the halfway line, you make that pull, the ball's already gone, nothing happens.
It's like a nervous reaction, isn't it? You just do it. You don't know why you've done it. I think the thing that probably didn't help Will was that he was dragged out wide by Burns. It was the first time that Will was, and we all know centre-halves don't like being dragged out wide because they just had a pace. And I think that's what it was. He dragged him out. He then run the ball past him. If I'm being critical, I'd have liked Zanab to be a little bit more vocal with it because the ball was going dead. But look, he reached out. Burns took the touch. It's a penalty. People would say it's a soft penalty. Hey, look, it's a penalty. He got him into a situation he didn't want to be, and Will unfortunately suck out his hand.
Yeah. Penalty was converted. They then got a second one soon afterwards, which was Burns again.
Right. Good finish.
Good goal. No complaints there. That's happened. But great character. Fantastic character to come back up. Two set pieces. Anthony Hartigan deliveries both occasions. Is that the work of our set piece restarts coach coming to the fore?
Yeah, I spoke to Andy Parslow at the sponsors meal, actually, because I was laughing.
Andy Parslow being our restart coach. If anyone's not familiar.
Yeah, I get on quite well with him, actually. We've interviewed him a few times, and I spoke to him at the train grammar recently, and I was saying to him, I bet you were well pleased. You've got all the plaudits on for the... He went, yeah, it worked well, didn't it? And while I said that, I said, you must seriously be happy when you get something right, because when something goes wrong, you're always a person it comes back to. It's that sort of thing, isn't it? And he was like, yeah, it worked really well and stuff like that. So replays. Little quick story. I caught up with Alex Woodyard on the sponsors meal, and we were talking about the game. And I was like, George Jones, won't mind me saying this, but George was like, it weren't a booking, by the way, Alex, it weren't a booking. And I think, remember, he got done by Joe Piggott on the halfway line.
Right, yeah.
And it was a booking, because basically I was like, you turned out and he knew what you were doing. And yeah, he goes, I did call him a few things after that. You know, that's what you get. Basically, that's what Alex Woodyard was doing training. He would turn out, but Piggott could saw the sign, got him. He said, then I saw that there was no one batting. I just had to drag him down. And I said to myself, I was worried about you, because that's a long time to be about, you know, on a second yellow card. You're not very good with them. And he gets the up, doesn't he? He gets the up so quickly. But he was saying, like, they were giving him lots of grief, because Piggott actually set up one of the goals, didn't he? He got the flick.
Right.
Which wasn't, obviously, wasn't in the script, but it was nice that he helped us out. He said that Andy Parr, as I was saying, we were supposed to get a flick. It just wasn't supposed to be Joe Piggott.
For the first goal, wasn't it? For Hennigan's goal, the flick. Yes. And then Hennigan put it away. And then Hennigan heavily involved then in the equaliser, because he won again at the back post, heading it back across.
Yeah.
And Radoni's in the middle there to tuck it away, which is not a familiar position for Jack to find himself in, but I guess forward player, last minute, you're in the 6-yard box trying to see what you can poach, like a poacher's instinct, like a who was that player we had once that was just Matt Tubbs almost, yeah, in the box, just Poacher's Instinct. Did very little else.
Yeah, there's many like that, isn't there? Like, you know, going back to Gary Lineker, didn't score one. I think he scored one goal outside the area in his whole career.
Yeah.
But he was priceless in instinct, isn't it?
It's exactly the point I make, though, because Rodoni, who we've seen before, is very much his of the spectacular things, long-range strikes, long-distance strikes, things outside the box, but then literally right on the goal line almost tucking it away.
Yeah, and I suppose, do you know what? I think it's something that he's adding to his game. We were talking, weren't we, about the goal he scored against Rochdale when he scored that flick header. Great header.
That's true.
And I never expected Jack Rodoni to want to get a header because he's got a lovely little haircut, hasn't he? Do you know what I mean? With his firm. And he looks, and he won't mind me saying this, he's a bit of a nicey boy, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? But actually...
You say nasty boy?
Nicey boy, sorry.
Oh, I think you're making a 90s WWE reference.
But realistically, he probably should get more goals than what he does, because actually he's decent with his head, which you wouldn't expect. But you're right, you know, picking up those scraps. And he wasn't alone. When you look in the area, there was a couple, wasn't there, around the keeper?
Yeah.
And of course, it was such a bad mistake by the goalkeeper that he's now basically third choice.
If you've got more players than they know what to do with, it's ridiculous. But if you say, in the right place, right time, capitalising on good deliveries by Anthony Hartigan, who we spoke about on the podcast last week, and he's come on absolute leaps and bounds at the start of this season, as we mentioned. Yeah. Striker partnerships is an interesting one with a view to the Oxford game as well, because we were expecting Dapu Mabude to be away for the Oxford game, but he's not. He's staying, so he's going to be in the squad on Saturday. Because Robbo's gone with a front two against Ipswich, and Presley and Palmer with a choice, and people have said, well, they can't really, and they had the conversation in the week, hadn't we, at the Northampton game, saying, can they play together? And Robbo's like, I think they can. We've worked with them, got them to develop a relationship. He's gone into the Ipswich game. And I was thinking, well, that's also because we won't have Mabude for Oxford, so we're probably thinking it's going to be those two again. But substitutions, that changed up again on Saturday, and now we're looking at, are we going to have a strike partnership? Are we going to have a consistent, or is it just as Robbo's continuing to do, change shape, change combinations depending on the opposition?
Yeah, do you know what? It's an interesting thing. I know Robbo is very keen to not be seen as a tinker person, you know, that sort of side of it.
I love how you've taken the gendered language out of that. Tinker man.
Hey, look, I'm getting used to this now, this sort of like this new wave. I'm joking. But yeah, I think Robbo sent me an interesting video. He sent it to both of us. I don't know if you've watched it at all, with Thomas, whatever his name is, at Chelsea.
Chelsea manager.
I know. But basically what it is, he started, and halfway through it is a really interesting thing where the press picked up every time he'd made, and he'd go, right, you've made six changes. You've made eight changes from the last game. And he generally didn't know. He was like, have I? And he actually asked one of it, and it actually comes to a point where he asked one of his assistant managers, and that it's like, is that the right team? Because it was mentioned again by somebody within the squad. And he genuinely didn't realise he was making so changes, because what he was doing was picking the side that he felt would beat that team. And I think that's what we're doing. We've also got a young team. You know, there's a great feature today on Sky Sports with the 20 podcasts, what it's called now, not the 20 podcasts.
Not the top 20 podcasts.
That's it, not the top 20 podcasts. And they love us at the moment, talking about average age, three players in 19. I think, do you know what? I think why it didn't work at Ipswich was because I think sometimes it does naturally, somehow in your head, it's psychological, makes you go long because you see two big target men on that. But it works if you can get a Sal, Hartigan, McCormick around. That's what we didn't do against Ipswich. We didn't work off it. I've no doubt it could work against certain teams, but we also need to have a Sal on it, McCormick, and that was probably one of the quieter games for Ayub, which says something, because we've set him up to such a level now, haven't we, that when he has an average game, because it wasn't a poor game, it was just an average game, but he did have a good left back against him in Coulsdon, wasn't it, Coulsdon. But I think Robbo is literally making a team that he thinks can win the game, and I do laugh when I hear about the constant changes when we've gone in, you know, we're in September. We've lost one in seven and we're in the third round of the League Cup. So he's actually done really well with that squad. and no major injuries, touch wood, at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned there, young squad, we have always said with young players, you don't want to throw them in the deep end when they come into the squad, and you break them in gently. And if you've got a number of young players in the team, you can't have them playing Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday. They've been burnt out by now. You'd have lost half your squad already by this point. So you do need to have that element of keeping them fresh because, well, it's the nature of their age and their growing bodies.
Do you know what? It's interesting you say it because I remember thinking Greenwood at Man U come on the scene last year, didn't he?
Yeah.
Didn't see him for about 2 or 3 months. Just withdrawn out of the squad.
Yeah.
So because of that reason, you can't play those amounts of games, can you? Your body's developing and stuff like that. And that's the challenge for Robbo because he's having to do that. And unfortunately, some of the players that are quite influential to our team are the 19-year-olds. So, you know, if someone, let's be fair, if we go to Plough Lane tomorrow and AF's not in our squad, he'll be like, he's not in. What are we going to do? He becomes that influential to our squad in such a short time. It's mad. But Robbo's got to manage that because he's got to make sure that, you know, AF is able to play to the best of his ability, not just play, but put a performance in. Because there's no point in being there and he's knackered or he's got injury. And, you know, I think that's what he's done. He's withdrawn out of squad. Jack Radoni was the same, wasn't it? Come out.
Yeah.
He's being fed gradually back in, if you probably notice now. He's like a substitute, isn't it? Yeah. And I wouldn't be now surprised if he gets a bit more of a longer time and then taken out. Because Jack played, what, he must have played, what, 30, 40 games last year?
Easily.
Yeah. Easily. And for a youngster, that's a lot of games. So he's doing a great job, but I think he's going to have to keep doing that even more. But Mabudi, so pleased. Obviously, who would want to travel with Scotland anyway? Why do you want to play for Scotland?
Why have we got a player in our squad who's Scottish and plays for Watford? What is going on in the world? Is this deliberately trolling me?
Yo, I didn't realise he was Scottish until we done an interview. And I was like, you know when a voice comes out of someone's face, you're like, what? What?
A voice comes out of someone's face.
You know what I mean? The voice doesn't match. The voice doesn't match what you're seeing.
Right. Yeah.
And it doesn't. Like, I'm like, what? I didn't realise you were Scottish. Like, I think it's great he's from Watford. I think we should have a better relationship with Watford and we should get a lot more. But the Scottish side of it, like, who would want to play for Scotland? So I'm not surprised he didn't go. Who would want to go? You know, I think the country he was playing was on a red list, but I think Scotland should be on a red list anyway. Don't go to Scotland.
For viewers of a sensitive disposition, Stu is joking. We have to clarify when we're being sarcastic, Stu, because people don't understand. We have to be.
It's a lovely place. It's a lovely place, Scotland.
Stu has family in Scotland.
Yeah, but the best thing about Scotland is that road out of it. It's great.
Keep digging. Right, anyway. Who had the. Do you know what? Whilst we're on the subject, though, as much as Stu is joking about Scotland there, I don't joke about Wales. Don't go to Wales, people. It's a third world country. Best week for us. Best player,
Ben Henniker, easily.
Okay, fair enough. I'm not going to argue with that. Not disagree. Did anyone have a particularly bad week? Can we just say Will? Because it was he'll be kicking himself about that penalty because he knows.
Yeah, had a penalty, and also he was last man, wasn't he, for the pass of Burns? Not that he could do much about it, but yeah, look, just to pick somebody, Will Nightingale didn't have a great week, but I'm sure he will have a great week now coming up.
Absolutely, 100%. Right, elsewhere in League One last weekend, results that highlighted Morecambe 1, Sheffield Wednesday 0. We had to pick, so that's Sheffield Wednesday's first defeat at Morecambe, who have come up and are holding their own very early into the season. And then Shrewsbury beat Gillingham. There were 942 sendings off at full time. But Shrewsbury, as we discussed last week, they got that all-important first win and points on the board. We thought Gillingham at home would be a game they'd have to win in the grand scheme of things, because I think Shrewsbury will be battling all season against this, so that was important for them to have that little confidence boost. And they got it, so fair play. And I don't think Gillingham was a particularly happy camp at this moment in time.
Let's be fair, how quickly did Paul Rayner go down? Like, I know, like, if he was in WWE, they would have gone like, hey, look, that's a bit too easy. He enjoyed being on his back, didn't he? He was like a little dog, wasn't he?
They would have loved it in WWE, because that's what you meant to do. You meant to sell. If you're being on the receiving end, you've got to make the other guy look good. So you're meant to go down quickly and really sell how bad you hurt you are. So from that perspective, his acting ability, they'd quite approve of.
Yeah, but do you know what, that keeper? I don't even think the keeper looked surprised that Paul Rayner had gone down so easy, because he didn't go over with any, he went over, but he didn't go over with any sort of like aggression. And before he even touched him, Paul Rayner's on the floor rolling around like a dog. Like, what's going on?
Anything else to pick to your eye? I thought those were the main two results, to be honest with you.
I'll be truthful. It's been such a long week. I've actually forgotten what happened last weekend.
There were some crazy results, Stu. Sunderland beat Wickham 7-6. And there was a postponement because of floodlight failure between Oxford and Lincoln.
It just feels like a long week. I do remember the Morecambe the win. I think that's a great... You know, Morecambe are doing a lot better than what I thought. Oh, well, hand on heart, I didn't think they were... It's a long season.
It's still very early days, yeah. No, it's still super early. Yeah.
You know, just as much as we don't think Morecambe are out of trouble, we don't think Sheffield Wednesday are not going to finish any higher than what they are. So it's a long season, isn't it? But they picked up some valuable wins. And, you know, they're not expecting to win against Sheffield Wednesday. It's a bonus result for them, and it will help them in their relegation battle, because that's what it would be.
This Saturday, going to have some fun with the opposition manager, no doubt. His first visit to Plough Lane with supporters in the stadium, so we look forward to that. Oxford currently third in the league. Wow. Won three of their five games, and they beat Lincoln 3-1. Lincoln have not... They've got problems at the moment with injuries and stuff, but they still had to beat them. They beat them 3-1. James Henry, who's been consistent at this level for a number of years now, got a hat-trick. He's a very good player, very, very good player. I've always rated him. Last season, beating playoff semi-finalists, Blackpool beat them in the semi-finals, as we know. So they're the club that just seems can't get out of this division. It's very reminiscent of when their manager was at another club in the sort of South Midlands area, where just couldn't get them over the line. What a shame. But they have got good players. They've got good players. So it's a tough fit. It's always a tough fixture against Oxford. They play possession football. They like to dominate possession, cause problems. They have got players. They have got goal scorers. Tough game. Do you think our press is going to be an area that's going to frustrate them? Because we do hunt in numbers and they do like to pass that ball around. I don't know if they're going to be able to mix it up that much. Matty Taylor, big guy up front, but they don't tend to like to sort of play more direct. They like to keep it on the floor. So
yeah.
So we our hands a little bit, maybe.
It'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Because like we beat them 2-1 last year. They were 1-0 up, then we got the penalty, didn't we? And they got players sent off. Change the game, and we won that. But I felt from watching the games last year, they were probably one of the better teams that we played. I think they're a really good team, got some really good players in Brannigan, Matty Taylor. And you know what? I would say this, from taking away the fact that their manager is an absolute whatever, he does put good teams together. There's no doubt about that, and they play a certain way. I think, yes, it'd be interesting how we go. If we play the press, we're going to have to play it. We're going to have to play it at full pelt, you know, because if Oxford are a team, you don't press together, they're going to play through you. And that could be against us. So it'd be, if we get our press right, I think we'll beat them. I really do think we'll beat them. I think it'd be a good game to watch. It won't be, and this isn't right as a Wimbledon fan, like, you know, there won't be two long ball teams. It'll be purest football out there, which has Wimbledon fans, old school Wimbledon fans, we like a little bit of up and at them, don't we? But it will be a good game to watch tomorrow. I think we run out winners, I really do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm struggling for a prediction, actually. I think I'll do what I normally do, which is on the morning of the game, I tend to get a feeling for these things. I thought it was going to be a draw at Ipswich last week, and that's what I put down, and that's what I got. Another 2 points on the Arsenal Prediction League for me. So I'll see. But, I mean, if you were to give a scoreline now, Stu, would you just say, what, another one-goal victory for us? 1-0, 2-1?
Yeah, well, I've done my prediction on that league, 2-1. Mm-hmm. I did have a look to see if you put yours yet, but you hadn't.
I tend to wait for the morning.
Really random. Four alls. There was somebody saying four all draw. A 3-1 win for Oxford. Interesting when you see what other people think. Four all, I don't think so. However, we have had a 3-all already, haven't we? So but no, 2-1 for me. And I think but I think it'd be a good game to watch once we all get in.
Before we get onto the subject of being able to get into the stadium with a valid ticket or season ticket, just to say this is one of those weekends, which is an international week. Right. I don't know how many rants I can go on one show, because Lord knows I've got a few in me this week. And Stu, you actually suffered the brunt of a lot of them before we started recording. my rant this week is international week for a start. Do you know what? I used to love international football. I used to absolutely love it. Do you know what you'd have? You'd have the Saturday games. These are qualifiers, not friendlies. You'd have the Saturday games, and then you'd have the Wednesday games, and every single nation would be playing. And you could have a match of the day show on the evening on Sky or something, where they have to show all the goals and the highlights from all the different qualifiers. It was great fun. Now they've made it this, these, what they tried to make these festivals of football. So you've got them all spread out over the 7 days. They're all kicking off on different days, different groups, different times. Can't keep track of any of it. All for qualification for a competition in Qatar that I'm not going to even watch. So it's totally lost on me. And that means, but now it's stretched down to the third tier. And there's only four games in League One this weekend. In League One, because of international call-ups, there are four fixtures. What a waste of a football week that is. What happened to the good old days? Can we not go back to the way things were? I'm not even going to apologise for being old man yells at cloud on this one. I'm not going to apologise for being the middle-aged person that's living in the 90s, because I am right on this, and we'd all be happier if things were left the way they were. And you can stick your 8 o'clock Saturday night EFL kickoffs up there as well. Shove it up your backsides. Anyway, elsewhere in League One this week, Cheltenham versus Milton Keynes is the only game I gave a fuck about, because I want Cheltenham to smash them. Thank you, everybody. Good night. Stu, what do you want to add?
Oh, I love it. You're going to rant. Yeah, do you know what I got back thinking about? We touched upon this last week, didn't we, in the podcast, about the old like the World Cup and the old goals and stuff like that, right? Yeah. But you got reminded, actually, yeah, the way now it's literally every day. And like I said to you, I didn't actually really realise England were playing until I got a notification on my phone to say that the England lineup had been done. I was like, oh, okay. But I used to remember, like, Sports Night, when literally they would have all those fixtures, and it'd be quite exciting to watch 10-minute highlights of a game and an hour. I think we're a victim of what we moan about, like, you know, Match of the Day now, too long, too many highlights. Even the Quest sometimes can be a little bit long.
That's a slog most weeks, Stu. That's real hard to get through.
An hour worth of Championship football is like, oh. I just think less is more.
Less is more. Yes, 100%. You know. Yes, less is more.
Because we all have families and things you want to do in our spare time. And I don't know about you, but I can't watch Match of the Day and Quest on a Sunday morning, because otherwise I literally don't spend any time with my son and I end up with that. So I just want short, you know, bite-sized stuff, you know, quick football stuff. I don't need someone telling me, like, Clinton Morrison, what's happened. Oh, I can see what's happened. God. You'd give me no further insight into the game.
He is absolutely awful. He's terrible. Yeah. And I did actually watch, was it the League Cup one? He was on the midweek one with Jackie Oatley was a presenter.
That's right, yeah.
And he must have said, and he did well there, every single thing, every single goal. It's like, and then he's done well there. And he's done well there. He's done well there. I was like, you're not actually adding anything to this, Clinton.
No. And what Quest had done well is they brought those guys on from the not a top 20 podcast. And they actually had more value. I actually enjoy listening more to them than most of the other commentators, because actually they know their stuff.
They know their stuff. Yeah.
You know, that's what I want. I don't want an ex-pro who thinks they can tell me what, you know. Oh, there's so many. Michael Richards, I'm a bit disappointed. Is he now left Sky Sports and gone to BBC? He's on Match of the Day.
I've only ever seen on BBC, but Stu, I honestly barely watch any football these days. So I saw, because I think it came on Sunday morning. It was on really late Sunday morning, Match of the Day, when I switched on BBC One. And I think it was Michael Richards on Match of the Day. Yeah,
he was on there. I watched Match of the Day just because I wanted to see the Arsenal drubbing. I want to see, you know, see how easy it's going to be for us when we play them. But it's the Premier League. It's just a bit. West Ham looked decent, but there's so many new players. I can't work out who signed for what. Antonio, top goal scorer for West Ham.
Yeah.
Who famously didn't come to us, and we were after it all those years back, isn't it? But I want to be able to watch football in a shorter space. But we just feel now we have to, you know, televise it to the whole world, and we're more interested in the Middle East time slot for them than we are for our own people in their country.
Saturation coverage, it's horrendous. What certainly hasn't been saturation coverage, this is a tedious link, I'm not even sure it can work, is the amount of people that had their season tickets delivered to them, because actually the number was zero. Nobody had their season tickets delivered to them. And at the last knockings, everyone's basically been summoned to Plough Lane to go down and collect their tickets from the gate. And it's all, tickets have been a mess. We can't pretend otherwise. All sorts of issues. Selling tickets, printing tickets, delivering tickets, home tickets, away tickets, ticket scanners, turnstiles, the whole gamut. Just been nothing's run smoothly. Don't know what's gone wrong. We're not behind the scenes, Stu, so we don't know. There's an investigation. We have to wait. The Don's Trust Board are going to investigate this fully at an appropriate juncture, and we'll know more exactly what's gone on then. But it has to be said, Stu, and thank you to all the volunteers that did give up their time. And in some cases, I am told, taken annual leave to go down to help out the effort to distribute all these season tickets to all these season ticket holders in the week. Thank you so much for your time and effort. It shouldn't be needed. It's unfair, I think, to have volunteers facing the public, dealing with the public in a situation like this. It's not how we should be operating. And I'm not suggesting for one second that there's anyone out there that thinks this is the way we should be operating, but it shouldn't have been allowed to come to this. However, things have happened. Whoever is at fault, don't know. Lots of moving parts. We will know more, obviously, in times to come. But Stu, just to give you an example, my old headmaster, he's resigned at the end of this school year. So at the end of last school year, he stepped down. He's a West Ham fan. Was at King's Meadow for both West Ham Cup games a couple of years ago, actually. And he lives locally. And he, because we've got the new stadium at Plough Lane, he got himself a season ticket. Went in on A-level GCSE results week in the summer. He said after speaking to me before the end of term, he said, look, I decided to go for it because they were well-priced. He said, I can cycle to the games. He can get home by 20 past five. He's loving life, right? But he's not familiar with us as a club to the degree that we all are. Yep. So I haven't spoken to him, but I do wonder, what is he thinking? What's he thinking? I don't think, like, if he'd have been down there during the week to go and collect his tickets, do you know what I mean? And we don't know how many people are like that have gone, do you know what? Yeah, great. I'll go. I want to watch some football. They're local. Don't know a lot about them, but I'll spend my money. But for them, it's a less of an emotional link and less of an emotional attachment to the football club. This is a business transaction. And this is not how they would expect, I'd imagine, especially if someone like that was to have queued up for, say, 2 hours, get to the front of the queue, and then find out, oh, we don't actually have your one.
Yeah, you're right. And I think this is the thing, isn't it? You know, I think at King's Meadow, we couldn't expand on the fan base because we just didn't have any room. And I think, you know, we got away with things at King's Meadow when things didn't go right. And we had that attitude of, well, you know, we're in this together. We've got volunteers helping. And we had a lot of volunteers, a lot of match day volunteers. More forgiving. But you're right, new fans to the club, or they don't have that. They want a customer service. They want a service. They're paying for a season ticket, which is supposed to, you know, get them in, beat the queues, get them discounts, et cetera, and stuff like that. And they're having to constantly have different information. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? So much different information. And I'll be honest with you, I saw information on Tuesday and I thought that would change by Friday. Shouldn't think that way, but I sort
that's
of like
the way
you know,
it's gone, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think what I would say is I've lost a bit of confidence in the ticketing side of it. I welcome the fact that we have an independent investigation because I think that's really needed, you know, one, to see what happened, but two, to make sure we put stuff in place for it not to happen again. You know, that's the thing. Any investigation you have is not to throw stones at people. It's actually to go, do you know what? This didn't work. This is what we recommend. You know, that might involve more people, might involve the ticket system not being right. Because you're right, you know, in terms of the team tickets, we had QR codes that, you know, we had people writing out tickets. We had a printer not working. Everything that can go wrong went wrong. And then we had the turnstiles not working. So for a club, and you're right, you know, the main revenue stream for our club is tickets. That's the revenue stream. Yes. If you aren't, you know,
core part of your business.
Yeah. So if you aren't confident, even as a business, let alone a fan, if you're not confident as a business that it's going to work and you've got to spend extra money, I don't know, to get it to work, to do additions, and then actually don't know who's coming in. So we have a Downs attendance for Bolton as 7,006. Some people are saying, well, actually,
7,700, I think, yeah.
Yeah. And some fans go, oh, I think there was 8,500 in there. And we just don't know. But we know it wasn't full. And we also know that people were told it was sold out when it wasn't sold out. And I was there on Tuesday for the sponsors meal and I was waiting outside for late Rob. And two fans went into two kids, 16, 17. And I heard him talking. They went into the club shop and then come out quite quickly about anything. I was like, oh, that's a bit tight. But as they come out, they went, I can't believe it's sold out already. And I chuckled to myself because I'm thinking, well, it probably isn't sold out. But they could have been two local teenagers wanting to go to a game and it was sold out. So will they come back again? I'm surmising. Will they come back again? Because actually, there was nothing to say it was sold out. There's nothing to say tickets were on sale. We don't have a ticket office. There's lots of things, you know, and then we need these walk-up people because we may get, you know, I went to a Wimbledon game. I got a free ticket. Well, basically sneaked in when I could. I sneaked in the turnstile. But I've been hooked for 32 years. So it only takes one hook. And we've got a great stadium, but the ticket situation needs to be resolved. Because revenue streams are, hey, look, we've got a 4.6 million bridging loan to pay in April. We need attendances.
We need money. It has to come from somewhere. I think we will one day, Stu, look at this properly when we get the chance to, because we do need to talk about this bridging loan and the financing of it. We are, however, running late.
Ah, but as usual, sounding great.
So very, very quickly, in less than a minute, Stu. Sponsors meal was on Tuesday. You've mentioned it a couple of times, dropped it in, but a nice evening with all the players.
Yeah, lovely. Do you know what? Robbo, what you see with Robbo in interviews and how well he speaks, you have to sometimes see it, how he rubs off on players. They are a credit. They are a credit to Robbo and the club. They are so well-behaved. I say that like well behaved, but these are kids. Like, I don't know how about you, Nick, but if I was 19 and sitting on a table with some real business people, I think I'd absolutely struggle at that age. But you know, they're really good adults. Annie Harton came over and chatted to us. David Charles did. They come, all the players come in at 6 o'clock, and some of them are still there at 10 o'clock. Like, and apparently they've been there all day. They've done that. I don't know if you've seen a video of the kit, not the kit launch. You know, the pitch and stuff. So they've been there all day. But they didn't really want to leave, which is great. They looked all comfortable around the fans. Had a good laugh with Andy Woodyard and Ollie Palmer and that sort of stuff. But great evening. Yeah, great evening. And if you haven't got involved, you know, look, all the trouble that's been around, you know, sponsors and COVID and stuff like that, it's a good evening. And it really does fire you up to see what Robbo's building because, like I say, what you see in the video is great. Trust me, if you see what he's doing with the players and their behaviours and just how they are as men, it's impressive.
Someone else who's been very impressive over the years is Jane Lonsdale, who's currently the co-chair of the Dons Trust board. But from November, or not from November, sorry, that's when the elections are, but from January, she will no longer be. She is going to step down from the Dons Trust board after 8 years of service, and we want to just put on record our great thanks, Jane, for everything you've done. Insane amount of work that you have done over the times, over the years, immense amount of work, very, very helpful, very, very supportive of the fans and the model that we have and fan input and podcast as well. So thank you very much, Jane. Absolutely, totally support your decision standing down because I think you need that time now. You've given so much and it's time, as you said now, to just maybe relax and calm down a bit. But outstanding work and your service will always be remembered absolutely for your time on the Dons Trust board. So thank you. Thanks also to Ed Leake, who is also stepping down after many years on the board and helping out on our finances after being co-opted a couple of years ago. So thank you very much. There is a re-election in November. There'll be 5 vacancies, Ed and Jane's, and then Tim Hillier, Graham Stacey and Nar Cooper will be up for re-election as well. So more information about that over the coming weeks. I think you just echo those comments, Joe.
Yeah, do you know what? I messaged Jane in a week, actually. We are friends as well. And I don't think she got my humour, which is pretty terrible. And said, you know, finally, stepping down, not because I don't want her to stand. I just, you know, she's got a lovely family and she spends so much time. And one thing that Jane does, if you don't know Jane, if she does something, she does it with passion and she does it well.
She doesn't do it by halves.
No, she puts everything into it and she gets great results. I love bumping into a Don's Trust kiosk because things she's good about is she tells me how it is sometimes if I need to know that.
Yeah.
No, she's straight. She doesn't, you know, dress anything up, but she's very supportive, a good friend. And I'm just really pleased that she's going to get a chance to enjoy stuff away from Plough Lane. But if we know Jane as we do, I still think she would be involved in things, but just not the level, you know, not that commitment, but she can probably pick and choose what she wants to get involved with, which I think is great. But yeah, no, thank you for your service. And yeah, I can still hear her from where I was. You know, she's in a West End. You can still hear Jane. Jane's the most passionate supporter, which makes me chuckle with her husband, Richard. But yeah, no, real big thank you. She would be a big loss. But yeah, thank you. Thank you for being done.
20 years ago this week, September the 3rd through to September the 9th, our last season as Wimbledon FC. Stuart, it's a painful week. It's a painful week for me, this one. On the 9th of September, we lost 3-0 at Watford. It was a Sunday night game, one of those stupid ITV Digital 6:15 kickoffs. Paul Heald was sent off because he collected the ball and then he just, his momentum carried him outside the penalty area. Referee gave his handball, sent him off unfairly, cheating Watford all over again. All over again, cheating Watford. They went on to win 3-0. Marcus Gale scored against us. Painful evening. Do you know what I hated most about this game? So if you remember it, it was because it was on TV. We used it as a bit of a protest game. There were black balloons. There was a flyover with a plane carrying a message about Charles Koppel at the time. And it was meant to be a big protest. And it was a big protest and it was well captured and well reported on. The Watford fans were meant to have supported us in this protest. They didn't. They did bugger all. And there was a website at the time, a Watford fans website, that a lot of our fans were very appreciative and supportive of. It was called Blind, Stupid and Desperate. It was an online fanzine. And they were all over it in the beginning saying, yeah, we're totally against this move and Fans United will defeat this. We'll be all against it. Da, 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 da. And then the match report from these fans after the game, they didn't mention the bloody protest whatsoever. They were more concerned because one of their players, Paul Robinson, scored with a tackle. They said, this was the game. Paul Robinson scored with a tackle. And this is what this game will be remembered by. I'm like, oh, bugger off. Watford, I hate you. So I have no time for Watford. I don't like them. I don't like their fans. Hated this game. Not going to speak any more about it because I hate them so much. They have one good thing, and that's that Neil Ardley once played for them and they beat Milton Keynes 4-0 once. That's it. Nothing else. Hate you, hate you, hate you. Hate, hate, hate. Do you know what else I hate? Too Close by Blue was number one.
Yeah, I just saw that. Awful song. So are we saying that basically the Watford game is we remember because of how big a tackle Paul Robinson did?
No, I don't. Do you even remember it?
Oh, but he obviously had a big tackle.
Stop talking about Paul Robinson's big tackle.
Well, it's obviously what was remembered by it. So, yeah, well done.
Yeah, thanks, Watford fans. Yeah, we want to support you in this absolutely horrendous situation that you find yourself clubbing. We're going to be with you every day. Oh, no, one of our players scored and we won 3-0, so we no longer care. Thanks, great.
Yeah, Blue, Too Close. I can't remember the song, to be honest with you. Not that I'm a big Blue fan. Yeah, music makes, yes. Do you know what, I don't understand, I'm very, very quickly, I'm off subject, but very quickly, last night I was really bored, couldn't find anything to watch on TV for the England game, and I watched this guy basically reacting to music. Weird, like Gogglebox gone weird. But basically he would listen to music and he would have his headphones on and he would react to it. And he had like 100,000 views. Obviously, one more because I viewed them.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. What it basically was old music and how they were like, he listened to Righteous Brothers.
Mm.
And his reaction was amazing. He went, wow, I never realized this was a remix. And how good is this? The original version is the best version. And it just made me think, Joy, some of the old days were good. Like, some of the old music was great.
Everything was better in the old days, Stu. Everything.
I know. But then he did listen to the Venga Boys. He was American. The Venga Boys, and he went, this song is called Boom, 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 Boom.
Mm.
No, you don't say it like that, do you? Do you know what I mean? The Venga Boys. And they watched, they showed a video in a small box. Wow, music. I loved it. He was listening to all sorts of music, but he never heard them before.
Yeah.
Never heard Alanis Morissette. Mm. The most troubled lady. I'm going to see her in concert in a couple months. Very angry lady. Very angry lady. But yeah, just...
She's no, yeah. Who's the other one that's got very, Sinead O'Connor. You're not going to see her, no?
No.
She's got very political, isn't she?
She did. But yeah, it was just, like I say, really interesting with music. And when you talked about Blue, not that that was a view, because people don't know who Blue is. But yeah, strange what people, 100,000 people viewed that, watching somebody watching a video.
I know, I don't understand it. I don't understand it at all, to be honest.
The world. But yeah, I watched it. I'm as guilty. I watched it. So that's another view. But yeah.
Well, yeah. What can I say? Did you watch A Knight's Tale, which was the number one box office hit on this week in 2001? No, I don't. I don't remember it, to be honest with you. But I did study the because it's based on the Canterbury Tales by Chaucer. It featured Heath Ledger, but it was like the anachronistic version of the Canterbury Tales in the same way they did Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes, and that's what it was meant to be. And I didn't see it, but I did study Chaucer for my A levels, The Merchant's Tale, and it's hard work. That's about it though for this week's Stu. I think it's time to call it a day on that one.
I know, and we've done it on the eve of a game against Oxford. It's football tomorrow. I can't wait to get in at 3:30.
On that note, thank you very much for joining us this week, listeners. And we will have updates on Twitter from the Oxford game at 9YRS podcast. We won't do for the stupid B-team trophy game in the week against Portsmouth because that doesn't count. Stu, thank you very much for joining me this week.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk last, 2 + 2 = 4. We shall speak to you again next Friday.